Hi, I'm Chuck Norris, and this is my wife, Gina. We are here to talk about a growing concern we all share. If we look to history, our great country and freedom are under attack. We're at a tipping point, and quite possibly our country as we know it may be lost forever if we don't change the course our country is headed.
With our country at a crossroads, Chuck and I have asked ourselves what we can be doing to help support this great country we're blessed to live in, and how we can encourage our like-minded American brothers and sisters to unite and let their voices be heard. It is estimated that in the 2008 election, 30 million evangelical Christians stayed home on voting day, and Obama won the election by 10 million votes.
We know you love your family and your freedom as much as Gina and I do. And it is because of that we can no longer sit quietly or stand on the sidelines and watch our country go the way of socialism or something much worse. As Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men and women do nothing. Our great president, Ronald Reagan, said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Please stand with us. Let's unite for God and country, and may God continue to bless the United States of America.
What's wrong? What's wrong with you? Why would you start the podcast off on such a low energy downer?
That's a high energy song. It goes straight to build after
deep,
that.
Deep hole we're going to have to dig ourselves out of at this point. Right from the beginning.
Maybe I can turn around with a little questions of science.
No, stop it. Stop singing things from that band.
And progress. Would you like that I sing their disco hits that they come out with these days?
I wasn't aware that was a thing, but
yeah.
How's it compared to that, like, you know, late career shared disco type stuff that was happening?
It's not. It's
not
like
nearly
the,
as good.
It's like the Maroon 5 disco.
Oh, man, that's very popular with white people these days. I've heard that.
I don't get it. Like, is it? It's got to be some kind of
going through here.
There's got to be, like,
disconnect between you and what white people are listening to.
That.
You're white people. You should understand it more than anyone.
I just don't relate much to my white brethren these days.
I heard that.
But it's got to be lucrative for the other members of those bands if they're like, we're not going to play real music anymore, so you're probably just going to stand there with an instrument.
Start doing lame shit on that Maroon 5 tip these days.
Yeah, like, you still got to play shows with me. But you're just gonna stand there for half the time, and I'm the center point now.
That's when you just give somebody a tambourine. It never hurts to give somebody a tambourine.
I guess
keep them busy,
but like
until you can cut them out of your deal.
I think both of those bands are four pieces, and pretty much the focus is just Chris Martin and then the voice guy.
Not putting a lot of sound up there,
and then just disco beats and then stuff like that.
At least Moby's still getting work. Making these guys different beats.
Disco
beat. Is that true? Is Moby getting worse?
Everybody knows that they get their beats from Moby.
I haven't heard Moby's name in like 15 years. I just hope Moby's still getting work out there. I worry about you, Moby.
We play him at the bar periodically.
That vegan diet of his, he wasn't looking healthy.
I assume he was like...
Gotta get some proteins in there, brother.
I assume he was like 50 when Play came out anyways.
That's a good point.
I mean, am I wrong?
I don't know. There's a lot of stories about Moby being a perv and stuff. Maybe he got Me Too'd out of here.
That's funny. I didn't hear any of that. I was just going to say off the top of my head, he strikes me as the Kevin Spacey of music.
Yeah. I think he's like, I've heard shit about him like doing a game with his friends where they go around parties and like grab people's dicks and see how long they can get away with it.
I've heard shit about
him too, like claiming to have dated like numerous actresses are like, what? I never dated Moby. Are you kidding me? So,
you know,
some weird shit going on in Moby's life.
You know the old saying,
What is it?
When they're smoking a small child's underpants, there's probably pederast fire around the corner or something.
Thought it was Thar She Blows. Isn't that from Moby Dick?
Yikes.
Thar He Blows. Nobody wants to listen to that guy's music anymore. It was just a bunch of sampling old black people's music.
Dance, woman.
With nothing added to it.
I kind of like it.
Up your nose with the rubber hose, Moby. That's what I have to say.
Hey, we're here on the South Side at Baby Oil and
South
Blow.
Side of what?
I think that was one of his songs.
Oh, okay.
The one he had with Gwen Stefani. The South Side.
I remember when that one came out and nobody cared, and then it got added Gwen Stefani vocals, and then it was a gigantic hit.
That's right.
Yeah. Moby knows how to market himself. I'll give him that.
That's right. Take house music and make it accessible to all the white people instead of the drug-addled white people. Club drugs.
Music used to be cool and they were only aiming it at people who were on drugs.
That's right. This is your...
Now they're aiming it only at people's teenage children. Everything's a mess.
This is your EDM headquarters, Baby Oil and Blow. It's a molly-taking, trip-inducing...
Nah.
Action-paloozing...
I don't get on that molly shit.
No?
I just do fucking ecstasy. It's the same drug as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
The millennials aren't allowed to just rename Gen X drugs and pretend like they came up with something. Thank you.
You know me.
Oh, you like the EDM? We already had techno music. It's been invented, you stupid millennials.
You know me. It's huffing cans of duster or nothing at all.
That's right. You gotta draw a line somewhere.
Me and my girl, Allison. I am one of your two hosts. 90 days.
You got two hosts now?
Yep. 90 days clean on duster.
Gotta be much easier these days.
I am Matt O. With me, as always.
Over here.
He is the Jeff Van Vanderhausen to my Allison. I can't remember the guy's name on...
What are you talking about?
The intervention show. He was one of the guys who's like, you got a lot of people right here that they just love the heck out of you.
Is that the guy that hosted Intervention?
They just care about
you. Or are you just pulling out names from specific episodes of Intervention?
No, he was one of the Intervention hosts.
Okay.
They had different ones.
That's a good way to spend
it. He was my favorite one. He was like, hey, there's just a lot of people here that just... They care about the heck out of you.
Is he like a jaunty old Irishman?
A little bit.
Oh, shishai. Yeah.
But you're him. You are Nate Adams.
Oh, hoi hoi, everybody. Nice to hear that I'm the one who's helping people and you're the one on duster. I feel like that's a pretty accurate portrayal of what we're doing here.
I just said I'm 90 days clean, bro.
She just inhales the whole thing in her mouth.
Do I give you a chip or something? Is there a chip
that
I'm supposed to give you?
You were the one that asked me if I was going to take this gift that was being presented to me that day. You've
got to feign ignorance. All this stuff's supposed to be anonymous. I don't know how it works.
Man. From what I gather, you get clean for a little bit, and then you just jump right back in it.
Well, not quite in that order. There's also supposed to be a period where you like start talking about God a bunch.
Ooh, yeah.
Which, from what I understand, Kanye West is in that period right now, which sounds like it's probably very entertaining.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
Like going on TV shows and demanding we make prayer part of schools and stuff. I love it.
Yeah.
What's next for that fucking nut job?
I've seen some people be like, God is speaking through Kanye right now, and it's like, I think God might be like, hey, you might want to distance yourself from those Cardassians.
God's away on business.
Yeah. Oh, man. You blindsided me with that one, you old rapscallion.
I'd sell your heart to the junk man, baby, for a buck. Looking for someone to pull you out of that ditch. You're out of luck. You're out of luck. Ship is sinking. The ship is sinking.
Matt, this week we're talking about another movie about people who have fought in wars, devastating wars, all across the world to, you know, fight for our freedoms and...
wherever there's trouble over land and sea and air.
Economic interests.
G.I. Joe is there.
Whatnot. I don't know. Maybe even just because of some like political thing that we don't even understand because it's too trite and stupid, but a lot of people had to die for it. Well, those people who had to die were our veterans. So, we've been, you know, putting out a salute to veterans all month. They were calling hashtag Go Nuts November.
Go Nuts November.
Because there's a thorough thread that's gone through all these movies where we've been looking at veterans of wars is that they're all fucking whack jobs. They're all pretty crazy. Yeah. Half of them have murder sheds. There's a lot of weird jerking off going up in there.
You got to.
A lot of just stockpiling of weapons. And a lot of revenge scenarios playing out in people's heads. It's hard to get past the war from what I understand.
This whole thing's just culminating to us watching G.I. Joe the movie, right? Not the live action, but the cartoon.
Okay, we can do that.
I mean, that's the most important war movie I can think of.
Maybe we'll have to come up with an entire month of action cartoons. Is that a thing?
Oh yeah, I can find you something.
I feel like that's something that could happen for sure. Yeah. But not yet so far this month. This month we're doing all live action. Let's get into the rundown here.
Okay.
The rundown this week is, of course, brought to us by Chuck Norris Action Pants.
Ooh.
Pants that you can high kick in.
Yeah.
Essentially, Chuck Norris invented jeggings and doesn't get any of the credit for it. He was a little bit before his time.
It's
but
a good
call. I feel like he should be getting some royalties from those jeggings people. And, you know, that Chuck Norris money's coming in because this week we are talking about a gigantic Chuck Norris film.
Mm.
And that film is 1984's Missing in Action.
That's a big one right there.
I mean,
Cannon Groups.
You said it, brother.
Missing in Action.
You said it. The runtime of Missing in Action.
It's like a buck 40.
101 minutes. So, yeah.
Hour
over
40.
That. Hour 40.
Yeah.
Okay, so the budget of this movie, there's a little bit of a dispute going on out there.
Les budgets.
Some sources say a mil and a half they spent on this thing. Some people say 3 million. Cannon Films, notoriously low budget.
Yeah.
Makes you want to lean towards that 1.5. But I feel like they got the three million up on the screen there.
Well, okay, so this was the first one of the Cannon films that Norris did, right?
I don't know. I have not looked at the timeline of Norris and Cannon. USA with the same director was another.
That came later. He signed, and that had a bigger budget. He signed a 4 or 5 picture deal with Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And with him getting paid $1 million per film.
You gotta be kidding me. They gave a million of that shit to fucking Chuck Norris?
Yes.
So maybe just like they paid Chuck a million and the rest of it cost a million and a half. That could be what's going on here.
That could be, very well. But I'm saying, you gotta factor in that million for Chuck Norris, so.
Yeah, the director is Joseph Zito, who started off kind of in horror doing The Prowler, which is a really gross slasher I kind of like. Then went on to do Friday the 13th 4.
Never heard of it.
Which, in my opinion, is the second best Friday the 13th movie.
After Jason Takes Manhattan.
No, that's a
Jason
terrible
Jason 10
one.
Space?
6. The fucking Jason Lives is the best one, where he comes back as a zombie. 4 is the one where bald young Corey Feldman's hanging out and
I know you
Crispin
like that
Glover's
one.
Dancing. It's very nice. It's a great Friday the 13th movie.
I like 3D.
Then he went on into the action zone and started doing shit like this in Invasion USA. And I know one of your personal favorites, Red Scorpion. I know what a Red Scorpion fan you are. So this is kind of
you
a low-key titan of directing right here. The stars of this movie. Number one, we got fucking Chuck Norris, former karate Superman, as Colonel James Braddock.
He trained with Bruce Lee, sir.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. Apparently, I was looking at some YouTube before this, and Chuck Norris claims that
Norris.
He taught Bruce Lee how to high kick.
Maybe.
He's like, when I met Bruce Lee,
straight
he was refusing
kicks.
To high kick.
Just
he was saying,
sidekick.
You should only kick at the waist or under. And then I was like, Bruce, what if you have an opening to kick somewhere else?
That's a great point.
Yeah, it's a good point. He's very wise. Braddock is the next, you know, fucking commander in the Vietnam War.
A colonel.
All of his people got captured or killed, and then he was tortured in a POW camp for a while. That's his backstory.
He's like Troutman meets Rambo.
Along the way here, we've also got fucking Dynamite number one best character actor ever, Emmett Walsh fucking showing up, playing Jack Tucker, an old war buddy of Braddock's. Emmett Walsh has been throughout so many great movies, he's always the best part. Coen brothers use him well, especially in Blood Simple.
No. Tell the folks what they know him as. And that's Jill Taylor's fucking army dad.
The world is full of complainers. The fact is, nothing comes with a guarantee. Now, I don't care if you're the Pope of Rome, President of the United States, or Man of the Year. Something can all go wrong. Go ahead, you know, complain, tell your problems to your neighbor, ask for help, and watch him fly. Now, in Russia, they got it mapped out so that everyone pulls for everyone else. That's the theory, anyway. But what I know about is Texas. Down here, you're on your own.
Also, we've got James Hong showing up as one of the Vietnamese generals, just like a general bad guy going on, pencil pusher. Of course, he is David Lo Pan from Big Trouble in Little China, also in a million other things, because, you know.
Nice knife, Mr.
You had to have Asian people in movies in the 80s, and there was only like two of them in Hollywood, so.
Yeah, the other guy was the long Fu Manchu guy that's in Die Hard and every other action movie.
Yeah, yeah. Al Long.
Yep, there you go.
He's doing great. Also, we've got Lenore Kasdorf in here playing Anne Fitzgerald, who's just like one of the most shoehorned in unnecessary female characters.
She's like a...
You've ever seen.
I don't know if she's a hotter or a more less remarkable Marcy Darcy.
Yeah, she's got some Marcy Darcy going on, but I'm saying definitely hotter, especially when we get to see her jugs for a second. They look pretty good. You know Marcy wasn't Braver. Packing any gunboats like that. As far as action movies go, she also played Rico's mom in the Starship Troopers movie, so...
Yeah, Mrs. Rico. Of,
action credentials there.
The only good bug is a dead bug.
Okay, back out here into a tagline. This is what we usually do next. Ooh. This movie was a great tagline. Tagline is a...
Tag, you're it.
The war's not over until the last man comes home. That's for sure.
Okay.
Plot here is a little bit obvious. It's called Missing in Action. It's starring a fucking, you know, a veteran of the war. We've seen Rambo 2. Like, we know what this is going to be.
Yeah.
Officially, it's American servicemen are still being held captive in Vietnam, and it's up to one man to bring them home in this blistering, fast-paced action adventure starring martial arts superstar Chuck Norris. Following a daring escape from a Vietnamese POW camp, Special Forces Colonel James Braddock is on a mission to locate and save remaining MIAs.
Boom.
That's the rundown right there. That's all I want to do. Facts. Remember the summer that song was playing every 15 minutes everywhere you went? It really took a catchy song and drove it into the ground, the white people.
All I want to do is...
Can't let white people get a hold of anything.
Gunshot, gunshot, cash register.
Speaking of gunshots, it's time that we get into our next segment, which is bullet points. This is the meat of the podcast, I feel like. This is, you know, there's a lot of sizzle surrounding it, but this is what's going to keep you going right here. This is when we talk about all of our notes that we took when we watched the movie, Matt.
We open up in the home of MIA, and that's Sri Lanka. Wait, nope, that's the wrong
I was
MIA.
Say, that's not true.
We open up... in the shit.
So you were in Vietnam, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
Were you in the shit?
Yeah, I was in the shit.
Welcome to the jungle. There's no fun in games. Because this is Viet fucking Nam.
It's like, we don't know what's going on. It could be peaceful, it could be quiet, and then suddenly just ball of flame. The jungle's in flames. There's chaos all around us.
The jungle is ablaze with rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And, Chuck Norris
likes that old time rock and roll.
He does.
I'll tell you that right now.
Kind of music that soothes his soul.
Mm-hmm.
And Norris is like, oh man, I gotta get these guys out of here safely because I'm the guy.
They seem to be on the retreat. It's like there's just a chaotic battle you're just thrown in the middle of. You're given really no context clues of what's going on.
Not
it's
at
just
all.
Like people are shooting, people are running. Seems like the white guys are retreating, and the brown guys have gotten the best of them, probably.
Well, that's from what I know about history, which isn't much. That's how Vietnam turned out. So
seemed to be like a whole bunch of that over and over again.
How are you, Johnny?
Good.
The covert operations being geared up in the Far East. Your name was dug out by the computer as one of three most able to complete the mission.
Mission?
Recon for POWs in Nam. You'd be temporarily reinstated in the forces, and if the mission's successful, there may be a presidential pardon.
You interested?
Yeah.
Good.
Do we get the win this time?
So it doesn't take long till we get Chuck Norris doing his best Forrest Gump impersonation, where he's just lifting people up.
Uh-huh.
And he's just like, I'll get you out of here, I guess.
Yeah, this opening scene is to sort of start off the tone. Like, you don't really know
darkness
what this mission is.
Me.
Like,
all that I see,
how many guys are on one side, how many are on the other. We're given no sense of that. It's just like action happening. And that's sort of a theme that's going to go through this whole movie. It's just like action is happening on the screen. We don't really mind if you follow it or not. Like, we're just here to get some boobs up there and get some explosions up there and some gunshots, because we feel like if we get enough of that stuff going on in a trailer, we can sell some tickets to this movie.
Yeah.
That's the canon MO. Where the storytelling here, it's not going to be a number one priority.
Yeah, no. So he fights these Vietnamese guys for a little bit, and he's trying to get to a helicopter. And
ooh, the guy in the helicopter, the gunner who's got that American flag helmet on.
Yeah.
That's like one of the few things I remember from this movie as a kid. Because I think I conflate this and Missing in Action 2 and 3 like all together and don't remember them well, because I was never really a Chuck Norris fan. Always found his movies boring.
Yeah.
Didn't know why. Maybe it was because I was a young child. Maybe now that I'm watching them as an adult, it's just because he makes boring fucking movies.
Yeah,
But that guy with the cool American flag helmet and that big machine gun, he stood out from everybody else who was in there like jungle camos. And I was like, that guy's fucking cool. If I was in the war, that's the guy. I'd be right there.
I was trying to remember. I don't think I've ever seen this one. I want to say we were a Delta Force and Invasion USA household.
Invasion USA I know well. That's one I legit like. I remember another scene very well from one of these where fucking they got Chuck Norris all captured and they put a bag of rats on his head and the rats are all gnawing at his face, and like that fucked me up as a kid. I was like, that's pretty cool. I thought it was going to be coming in one of the flashbacks in this movie, but I'm like, guess that must have been Missing in Action too.
Yeah, could be. That sounds
who's to
feasible.
Say? What's going on here, though, is that all of these guys are getting wiped out. Chuck Norris is not doing a good job of being a commander.
No.
At one point, one of his guys, like, shoots some enemy, so then Chuck Norris gives him a big cheesy thumbs up, so then the guy, instead of protecting himself, pauses to give Chuck Norris a big cheesy thumbs up back, and then he just gets smoked instantly, because he, like, stops watching and, like, doesn't have his weapon up anymore. And I'm like, well, Chuck Norris, you just directly got that guy killed.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room for attaboys in the throes of war.
It doesn't seem like it. We're learning that real quick here.
That's a shame. So more of his guys get taken out until finally he's on top of this tower. And he's like, oh, man, I got to save these two random guys that are already dead.
Oh, that's pretty brutal. The one guy's like just getting bayoneted in the stomach like over and over again, and he's just screaming.
Yeah.
He's got a real realistic scream. Like,
they do a good job with it. Like,
the horrors of war are on the screen, that's for sure.
The bayoneting looks pretty decent. Like,
oh yeah.
You can't doesn't
I was
look
pretty
like
taken
a
aback
dummy
by
body
that.
Or
I was
anything.
Expecting much more like A-team violence throughout this, which you do get mostly,
sure.
But like that moment.
Yeah, they're gutting
them
good.
No, that was gross.
And then Chuck Norris is like, well, the only way I can save them is by jumping off of this tower with two grenades.
Yeah, he's just double-fisting it, and we get some great slow-mo as he does like a Chuck Norris yell and jumps, and then I'm like, well, this is the cheesy nonsense I was expecting.
Yeah.
Thankfully, you're going to reassure me right away there.
And then, bam, Chuck Norris snaps wide awake in a bed.
This is
one
of my favorite things that you can get in a movie, when your hero is introduced by being like a wallowing drunk, like just waking up from a stupor.
Yeah.
Fucking Norris is just hanging out in some shitty motel room or something, like TV's blaring, he's clearly hungover, instantly goes over to the fucking fridge and pulls out a silver bullet tall boy, the hair of the dogs it right away. This is the John McClane archetype right here.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's seen some shit.
This is what you gotta do. Now, he's not, he's in like a SRO apartment, which is just as good as a suicide ship.
Okay, I'd say so. He's got a TV that apparently has two channels. One of them plays the Spider-Man cartoon, and the other one just does news reports about missing in action, soldiers. And he just keeps flipping back and forth between the two of them.
Do you know why they were showing the Spider-Man cartoon?
I don't know.
This
they had the rights to it.
Correct.
So,
this was right after Canon Films.
So it was free.
bought the rights to the Spider-Man movie.
The long gestating, thankfully never made, because that would have been such a goddamn turd.
Yeah.
Canon film Spider-Man movie. I think they had Jimmy Cameron maybe on attached to that for a second. That could have been a brief maybe, but mostly probably a lot of bad that would have came of that.
Who's to say?
But they do have like a lot of little like moments where like I think it's Shocker maybe is like escaping from prison and like it's able to give him some like Vietnam flashbacks, like, oh, I've escaped from prison before.
Because right here,
if you're watching Spider-Man cartoons and having Vietnam War flashbacks,
right here, he seamlessly goes back in to a second Vietnam flashback.
It's
where he's getting tortured this time and he's all tied up and the guy's cutting his belly or something, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting tortured, though.
This is enough for him to be like, you know what? I'm remembering all these bad things the Vietnamese did to me when I was a prisoner of theirs. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to say yes to this thing.
Yeah, because I'm also getting talked about on the news about how I'm not doing something.
That's right. This is Spider-Man and the news story is directly about me. Yeah. Like, that's enough to make somebody, even if you weren't, like, tortured in a POW camp, if you just only had two channels and one of them was old cartoons and the other one was just news stories about you
being a piece of shit,
like, what a failure you are, you're just locked in a room watching that all day. That's enough to make anybody insane.
Maybe I just want to say, how bad could he have been tortured?
I mean
they show us a glorious shirtless.
One thing you need to know about this movie is they're gonna give you as many opportunities as possible to see Chuck Norris's welcome mat of ginger chest hair. Like, you're getting an eyeful of a lot of it. And we're not
unlike
getting any
Rambo,
like, Rambo scars. Yeah. Exactly. Like, when Rambo's gets off, he's got insane torture scars all over him. Chuck Norris is pristine, man.
Rambo looks like Sabu.
Looks like he just walked directly out of the Canadian woods, like a child of the forest.
Yeah. So I'm arguing, you know, couldn't be that bad. And then he gets whisked away to Saigon on Air Force One.
See, this is one of my, like, main complaints about this movie. He just, like, picks up a phone and is dramatically like, okay, I'll do it. So it's like, oh, clearly the government's been, like, calling him up like, you're
Braddock,
the
you
best action
this.
Commando ever. We've got intel about
Come
POWs.
On, Braddock.
You're the only one that can infiltrate Rambo style and save them. But it's like, no. That's not what this movie is. This movie is like, hey, we want you to go over on a diplomatic mission and, like, attend parties and talk to fucking politicians. It's like, what? Missing in action? Why are we taking this pit stop? No, thank you.
And they're saying, like, you were tortured because you were a piece of shit.
Yeah, James Hong is the main fucking politician guy, and he's just needling Braddock during all these, like, highfalutin meetings between the two countries, telling him he's a war criminal, et cetera, et cetera. Fucking Braddock's just like, I'm not a war criminal, I just killed assholes like you.
Right.
He's, like, walking around in Dickies and cowboy boots. Everybody else is, like, dressed well. And it's just like, what government allowed this? Like, under what circumstances is take a crazy ex-POW who was tortured by these very men? One of the two is directly the man who tortured
them. Like, as soon as he gets off the plane.
And he's the one we're going to send over as a diplomat?
As soon as he gets off the plane, he's like, oh, there's the Saigon whore that bit off my nose.
Yeah? Time you shut your cake hole, Yoko!
I mean, that's the whole fucking vibe of these whole fucking scene. That, it's either that or him bantering back and forth with the chick character who comes in here now.
Yeah.
She was on the fucking plane with him. And
this
it's
is
like,
her 20 minutes.
Now there's going to be a little bit of romantic tension between the two of them when she gets an eye full of Braddock's ginger chest hair.
So he's at these...
Just too much going on here that I don't care about that should not be in a canon movie. A canon movie should just be like, get to the point. Just like cheesy nonsense.
Explosion,
there's
titty,
at least
explosion,
11
explosion,
minutes
titty, titty,
here
explosion.
That we could get rid of and we can make this that 90-minute movie we're always fucking searching for.
Exactly. So he's going to these hearings where they're like, you're a piece of shit. And then he goes to this fancy diplomat dinner where old boy's like, hey, I had a question I wanted to ask you, Braddock. How come you're such a piece of shit?
Why are you such a fucking punk? Like, I heard that all your guys died just because you were such a punk bitch in jail. Like, I heard you got turned out and you were so many guys' bitches in jail, Braddock. Is that true? Many people are saying it.
And he walks away and he's like, well, I know what I have to do now. And that's just run roughshod over
all of Saigon.
Because I'm Chuck fucking
currently
Norris.
Known as Ho Chi Minh City.
So he goes back to the hotel with old girl, and she's like, how about a nightcap? By which I mean, put your wiener inside me.
Right. You don't invite somebody into your hotel room for a night drink.
Yeah, no.
Unless you're going to fuck them.
I was like, oh.
This chick is putting it out there quick. And she's here, like, on a very important job.
Yeah.
And she's fucking, like, just musking all over this hotel room lobby, like, fucking trying to get Chuck Norris coming into her room. It was tawdry.
When she was like, how about a nightcap? I was like, oh, okay, so they're going to dip down to the bar in the hotel and have a drink there.
Oh, hell no.
And then
no.
He just shows up at her door
with champagne
and two glasses. And I'm like, oh.
And she's, like, slipped into something more comfortable.
Yeah,
like,
she's got some sort of silky nighty
on. Yeah, but then, like,
Norris is distracted by the two guards in the hallway.
Yeah, he knows what's up. He's got a plan.
Then he realizes what she's wearing and does like the, oh, double take.
Which I was double taking too, because instantly Norris starts taking off his cowboy boots and unbuttoning his shirt and getting naked. And I'm like, it should be like the scene where like Norris is assuming that's what she wanted, but then she's like, what are you doing? Which they do try to make it as.
Yeah.
But how can you do that when you invite a man into your hotel room, change into a nightie before he gets there, answer the door in that, and then just be like, wait, what are you doing? I just wanted you to come over for a drink, and you're going to assume?
Well, in all fairness, she's like, what are you doing? And then she's like, well, yeah,
it's
right.
Weird, because like, they don't go for the joke, and like the joke would be like, because it ends up being a joke, because Chuck Norris is just going to change into fucking ninja gear.
Yeah.
He's not about to sex her.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. Yeah, she should have been shocked, but, like, instead she feigns shock, but is still, like, totally going to fuck him. Like, so, like,
I'm still wet.
They
shit,
have
Chuck
to go
Norris.
For the joke, but then, like, she's going to fuck him the whole time, and she's in a nighty, so it's not the joke where, like, there was a misunderstanding. So I just got to wonder, like, was that joke in the script, but then Chuck Norris was just like, I want her to, like, want to fuck me the whole time.
Yeah.
So, like, they just steamrolled over that, like, misunderstanding. Oh, you're getting naked. That's not what this is supposed to be a joke. So that you could make
ladies
it clear, like,
Chuck Norris.
Every lady who's going to be on the screen wants to fuck Chuck Norris.
Duh.
Just make sure that gets in there.
Whenever Chuck Norris isn't on the screen, women should be asking, where's Chuck Norris?
So we get a botched, like, sexual misunderstanding joke here that doesn't come off. But essentially what's going to happen is Chuck Norris gets in all black togs.
Yeah.
He's climbing out the fucking balcony. He's going to go off into the night, into Saigon, and see what's up.
He knows that there's other soldiers like him missing in action.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I gotta find out.
What we get here next is maybe some test runs for that Spider-Man movie they were thinking about. Because we get like a good 10 minutes of just Chuck Norris climbing around on ledges on buildings and shimmying down pipes and jumping from balcony to balcony. And not in any sort of like cool way like you'd get it in a movie now where it's like parkour shit going on. And it's like, holy fuck, this guy's pulling off some shit.
No, it's very like
slow,
tedious.
It's very plodding.
He's like, well, I really don't want
to
fall.
There's no tension to any of it. He's just being very careful and very safe. And like, here's another fucking 10 minutes that you could have just cut right out of this goddamn movie.
Maria was
slowing to a goddamn halt.
Maria was highly offended by this part of the film.
It was just like having flashbacks to me being highly offended as a child. But what was her beef with it?
This is the most boring movie ever. This movie's really boring.
Yeah, she's not lying there.
Yeah, so boring happens. Then he finally makes it
too
to
much
like
sneaking. This is one of the two times I have in my notes the headline, too much sneaking. There's going to be another scene later where there's too much sneaking.
Like the whole first half of this movie is flashbacks, sneaking, and Chuck Norris taking his shirt on or off.
That's right, which is definitely the highlight of all this so far. Yeah. You just make this like a Chuck Norris skin flick, we're getting somewhere, but we're not getting enough of it.
More like a Chuck Norris fur flick.
You get that one brief shot where he's got his fucking Wranglers off, too, and he's in the
bikini briefs.
Bikini briefs.
Yeah,
why would Brack be wearing bikini briefs? That's crazy.
Well, you're wearing tight jeans, and you're throwing kicks in them. You need that. What do you want? Boxers bunching up under there?
He just doesn't feel like the type. He feels, I don't even feel
think
like
just
this
be freewheeling?
Colonel. Yeah, it's freeballing for sure.
Yeah, I could see that.
Either classic old man tidy whiteys or freeballing. Like, I'm not buying this black silk underwear, to quote fucking JCVD.
It was the times, man.
It's just Chuck Norris's fucking personal underwear is what's going
JCVD
on
JCVD was a stunt performer in this film.
You gotta be kidding me.
Under the name J. Claude Van Damme.
What was he doing? Everybody who was getting thrown around was little brown men. How could he blend in?
He's probably Chuck Norris for the stunts that Chuck Norris didn't want to do.
They just grew a gross red beard on him and threw him out there.
Or just an American soldier getting blown up at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So then we get some cool shit going on here, though, because what he's doing is he's, like, just sneaking directly into James Hong's fucking bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, fucking nighttime murderer style. Puts a
like the Nightman
knife to the guy's throat and is just like, tell me where the MIAs are. Where are the POWs?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that was your plan? Sneak across. If there's one thing I'm impressed with, it's that he was able to just like find this guy's house in Saigon without like a cell phone and like GPS directions. Like, turn left. Like, I would have been fucking lost, but he finds his house, no problem.
Well, he remembered where it was.
Yeah, sure.
Same locale.
I remember back when I was in the war, I was always thinking about where the general's house was.
Yep. I knew if I ever made it back, I'd never forget that place. So he gets in there and he's like,
he's kind of like stealth take out a couple guys, which is cool. Fucking back fisting them and shit, knocking them out.
Yeah, he gets the info he wants.
There is like 1 million just like one punch knockouts in this movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He's constantly having to sneak places and like knock people out with one hit.
Yeah. But he's like, all right, I got the information I want. I'm leaving your room. If you move, I'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about to leave.
Because I got a knife.
And James Hong's like, I had a gun under my pillow, sucker. And Chuck Norris is like, I can throw a knife real quick. Yeah. You're dead as hell,
he's
bro.
He's the fucking asshole who brings a knife to a gunfight, but he still fucking wins.
Because he's Chuck Norris, man.
Yeah, this is maybe like one of the genesis of these Chuck Norris jokes everybody likes to do so much.
Yeah.
Which I was always very confused with, because like, why was Chuck Norris the guy that got picked to be like the ultimate fucking masculine guy in that? He's not like as ripped as other action stars. He's not as huge as some other action stars. I always felt like a Charles Bronson had more of a hard-nosed attitude, if you're going on that angle. Like, he's the most wooden, boring action star. Why is he the one that's the paragon of manliness?
Well, you know,
the beard?
Probably the beard.
90% the beard?
Yeah, 90.
Gotta it is be. A very full beard.
Charles Bronson was already like an old ass man by the time we were kids.
Yeah, he sure was.
So
he was another one that I didn't get when I was a kid. I always thought his movies were like, why is this old man in this action movie boring? But as I go back and watch his movies as adults, unlike Chuck Norris movies, I'm like, no, these movies are fucking awesome.
This guy's insane.
I could get down on some fucking Bronson movies right now.
Yeah, that's fair. So he's got to kill everybody, and that's a
Which
race against
does.
The clock to get back.
Gunshots, guards are up.
Because the main guy that tortured him is like, Braddock!
Braddock wasn't supposed to have left the hotel. There's fucking officials and army men everywhere.
So he's racing against the clock to get back to the hotel room before the guards get to the room, and it's like a real Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Like, ooh, got to get there before they open the door up.
Running through backyards, jumping over trampolines.
And we get one of the greatest scenes ever where he meets old girl on the balcony. She's been waiting for him, and he's like, quick, we got to get into the room. And then he's like, gotta make this look real.
Matt, what happens next?
Gotta make this look real. Rip your titties out.
He takes off his shirt. He pulls down her nightgown to her waist so her titties are out.
Just rips it off of her.
And then they jump in the bed and like get under the covers right as the guys bust through the door and are like, where's Braddock? And then like, they don't see her titties at any point after this. It's not we were in the middle of fucking, like, look. No, they keep their entire bodies under the covers.
Right.
She was already wearing a nightie, which is believable enough to, like, be in bed with. Like, there was legit zero reason for this rapey fucking pervert to rip her tits out before they jumped in the bed to put together this ruse. Braddock, how do you not get called out on this sort of stuff?
He's got PTSD. He's working through some things.
You don't get called out on it because, like, the next scene, it's the next morning, and she's just like, oh, Braddock, your plan worked.
I'm glad we're lovers now.
Now I'm all touchy-feely with you. Like, instantly, like, these two are an item, which makes no sense.
Because
this is the last scene she's in the movie. She never shows up again, nor is she ever mentioned or thought of again.
The third one is his wife and kid get taken hostage.
Yeah.
She's not the wife in it, is she?
They get missing in action. I wonder what the action was missing from. No, I can't assume this woman's coming back for the sequels.
Yeah, probably not.
Not that I know anything about the missing in action sequels other than that bag of rats on the head.
Yeah. So they're like, all right, buddy, even if it wasn't you, you're out of this fucking country.
Which makes sense because he's been nothing but a piece of shit ever since the literal second that he landed.
Yeah. And this
he is not a diplomat. Turns out he's a hillbilly fucking soldier who's got PTSD and hates the Vietnamese more than anyone on the planet. Not the best diplomat.
Thankfully, though, who
would have guessed it?
Thankfully, they kick him out, though, because this is where the movie starts to turn around.
This is where he just heads over to fucking Thailand to find some Bangkok ladyboys.
He's got to find his old buddy, his old war buddy.
See, this was at the point, too, where, like, the first thing you see when this movie starts is the Canon Films logo. So it's like, okay, this will be fun at least. Yeah. Second thing you see is, like, cast starts coming up and it's like Emmett Walsh. And I'm like, fucking hell yeah. At this point, I'm starting to think, like, where the hell is Emmett Walsh and how could he even come in? Because, like, we would have met him by now.
Sure.
He would have been in the flashbacks or something, or like we would have seen him in that first opening like battle scene.
Right.
But no, it doesn't. But the scene where we are introduced to him is one of the best scenes ever, so that's fine.
So he goes to Bangkok to find his friend. You get the awesome, what is it, Chris the Glove Taylor hit song. I forget what it's called. I think it's Tibetan.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Tibetan Jam. It's in Breakin'.
Okay.
Which I want to say is also Canon Films.
There is a lot of just fucking like silly dancing going out on the streets of fucking Bangkok apparently in 1984. Like
it's a banger.
A lot of clubs around, a lot of people just doing like some embarrassing white people dancing, and I'm like, y'all ain't even white people. Like this is embarrassing.
They're not even Thai. They're all Filipinos.
Yeah, these people are.
This movie was filmed in the Philippines.
These people definitely are all fucking a shade darker than Thais, but I feel like it's close enough. I'm buying it.
That's fine. But this is all Filipinos here, so they're clearly in like Manila, dressed up as Bangkok.
Hell yeah.
And he's at a club, and he's like, I need to find a guy named Jack Tucker. And the bartender's like, don't know who that is unless you give me money. And he's like,
Norris
I'm
has got money,
you.
Apparently.
He's like, here's $2.
He starts throwing around a lot of money at this point.
$2 whole. And then he's like, I'm going to kill you if you don't tell him. He's like, all right, he's at the whorehouse. And he's like, cool.
Yeah.
I know where to go now.
I'm going to go to the greatest whorehouse ever.
Never mind the whorehouse, because as soon as he walks away from the bar, somebody just puts a topless Filipino woman on top of the bar.
Just center of the frame. Which makes Norris ripping that lady's titties out like in the previous scene even more crazy, because we're immediately going to like Bangkok fucking like, you know, whorehouse scenes where there's gonna be titties. Like,
right,
that lady's titties in no way needed to be put in this movie.
I mean, they were
completely
nice,
gratuitous, and also they did seem pretty nice, but like
you only
so much shit
like
was going on
flash.
You only got a flash. You're gonna do it, like, at least do it in a way where you're really getting your money out of that lady.
Yeah, do like the whole, we're in the shower. How dare you walk
in
on us?
There you go. Now you're talking.
Yeah. Oh, man. See those suckers wet? Hell yeah.
We need to remake this. Exactly the same shot for shot, except for we're changing that scene.
And also,
it's a shower scene now.
And we're going to add a little more sneaking.
Okay, yeah.
So Chuck Norris goes to the whorehouse where we get a... I want to say her name was Miss Juliet, or at least that's what it said in the credits.
We found who this was. We've got very talented singer on the stage in this.
Her
English is impeccable. She's completely in tune the entire time.
If you think my body, and you
fucking
think
singing
I'm
Rod
sexy.
Stewart, while just like these little no ass Filipina girls are like slightly wiggling in like every corner of the room.
Yeah, there's just naked women all over the screen here.
The greatest place I can ever imagine going. I can see why Emmett Walsh's character loves it.
Yeah.
We're introduced for him. He's in a fucking whorehouse fight. He gets punched off a balcony. Full on Brian Denny. He splats on the ground right in front of Chuck Norris.
Yeah, but unlike Rambo, he's not dead. He's alive. And
very
confused
much so.
As to why his buddy's in Bangkok. And he's like, hey, I need a boat. And he's like, I'm in the middle of some stuff.
Yeah.
$10,000 for the boat. He's like, nah.
This is one of the many negotiation scenes we get in this chunk of the movie here, where Norris is trying to put together stuff for this mission he's got planned. He's got to do a lot of negotiating. We learn that, like, Braddock, this guy can negotiate like a madman.
He's a great negotiator.
He's getting an insane amount of just very illegal military equipment and assistance of high-powered boats and helicopters for what ends up just being a couple grand.
Yeah, so Tucker keeps, like, getting beat up and keeps dropping his price.
Chuck Norris is helping him in the bar fight a little bit and being like, I'll keep helping if you drop your price some.
And finally,
it's a fun scene.
Finally, he's like, all right, a grand. And he's like, cool. And he's like, here's my boat. It's a piece of shit. And he's like, all right, I need guns, rockets,
9mm bullets,
a bulletproof raft, and a helicopter.
Yeah.
And Tucker's just like, what the fuck are you? What are you talking about?
Crazy,
you crazy asshole. Yeah. He's like, I do know a guy that does have that stuff.
He's his old buddy, so we assume it's from the war, but, like, Chuck Norris is just, like, a fucking just, like, chiseled, in shape, pretty young guy. M. Emmett Walsh is a fat old slob. It's just like, how do they know each other?
In all fairness,
who is this man?
Like, Chuck Norris is just crazy Chuck Norris in shape. He's already 44 by the time this movie's being made.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, he's not really that young. And then it just
Emmett
makes
Walsh just,
Emmett Walsh look a billion years older than him. And it's just like, what were these guys in, like, the Korean War together?
He's
like,
got
what?
That one just like Bill Murray and Kingpin, like little bit of hair at the front hanging on still. He just got grown out real long. He's just a fat dude in Hawaiian shirts like throughout this whole movie.
It's confusing.
Totally gray.
It works.
Like,
you know,
I love it. They make a great team.
That was the actor they could get, and I'm glad it was him, you know? So he lines him up with this guy. I don't know. Who
guy
was.
With a weird accent.
And he's like, I have stuff. I'll give you stuff, but you have to pay a lot of money. And Chuck Norris again is like, oh, maybe you didn't hear. I'm the best negotiator in all of Bangkok.
So he just takes the like high caliber machine gun that the guy's trying to sell to him. And he just points his own machine gun at him and is like, I'm going to kill you with your own machine gun unless you give it to me for much cheaper than what it's worth.
I'm willing to give you money or murder you.
And then the guy's like, you drive a hard bargain, but okay. And, like, they leave as friends.
Yeah.
Like, Norris just fucking rolled this guy. They didn't leave as friends.
Pretty much.
What the fuck?
They're all cutthroat, so it's cool. So he's got everything together now. He's just got to go to the whorehouse one last time for no reason to get Tucker out of there. It's just to show more nudity.
This is also this part of the movie where people just start jumping out of closets right and left.
Oh, that's right.
There's
a
good 20 minutes of everywhere Chuck Norris goes. Like, we get
his
shirt off again. Somebody jumps out of his closet. He fucking fights and kills that guy. He, like, goes to brush his teeth. Some guy jumps out of the fucking medicine cabinet. Yeah. Like, it's just comical over the next 20 minutes of this movie, like, how everywhere he goes, there is some sort of Vietnamese agent, like, already fucking poised.
Yeah.
So he's, like, fucking shit's going down. Shit's getting hot. He ends up having to throw this guy out the fucking window, out into the street. And there's another guy across the street who shoots, like, a rocket-propelled grenade into his hotel room, which he just narrowly escapes the explosion by running the opposite side and jumping through the door. But also, like, this blows up into the street, and there's, like, screaming mothers cradling dead children.
He's
like, you just got real dark again out of nowhere, missing in action. Like, you're really lingering on all these dead children here.
Chuck Norris is like, this
is getting too hot.
This is unnecessary.
We got to get our shit. We got to get out early. We're leaving in the middle of the night. So
I got to get Tucker out of the whorehouse.
This is when he goes to get fucking old Tucker out of the whorehouse. He finds him in a back room, just like post-coitus cuddling with two naked whores. And his response to Braddock just coming in on this suddenly is, Braddock, hey, hop in.
Yep.
It's like, this guy's a lot of fun.
This guy's
why aren't I watching a movie about fucking M. Emmett Walsh's character and his whoring, just pirating ways? Why am I watching a movie about stiff, stoic, boring Chuck Norris just sneaking around places and then, like, getting jumped every 4 seconds? That would be a much better movie.
Speaking of jump, once he retrieves Tucker from the whorehouse, it awkwardly jumps to the docks.
That's right.
And it's a really weird edit.
It's now daytime, even though we were going to, like, leave early because shit was getting too hot, or I don't know. But either way, this whole scene, we get a scene where, like, they're trying to get on the boat and get on their way to Vietnam.
Like, as soon as
there's
like
a lot of, like, fucking dudes in cars
scene.
Chasing
them. As soon as they get to the scene, they're
already
getting
shot at. We're
in
mid-chase scene.
It's like,
what? Like, just like, and speaking of jump cuts, this is the first battle we get in the movie. It was just like, not great for letting us know what was going on, mm-hmm. but like you could, it was just like actions, like people are dying, Chuck Norris retreating. Yeah. This is just like a car chase where Chuck Norris gets in a semi, he's trying to like knock these guys off the dock or whatever so they can leave, and it's just terribly shot. Like yeah. the cameras are just fucking everywhere from every angle. Like they, the jump cuts are nonstop. You never know how close or how far apart the cars are to each other, which direction they're coming from. There's just, it's senseless, just action noise on the screen that's completely dizzying and confusing, and it means nothing. It's a fucking Michael Bay movie, this goddamn yeah. chase. Yeah. I hated it. This should that's be like bad. A big centerpiece action scene in this movie, like fucking trucks knocking cars off docks and shit, but yeah. it's just so terribly shot.
Then Chuck Norris drives the truck off the edge of the dock, but jumps off the side of the dock before
mm-hmm. That's right.
the truck goes over. And it looked like it was him doing it. It really looked like it was
they're
him.
They're paying him $1 million. He better fucking
do a couple.
He better be
of
out there
stunts.
Doing some of this shit, yeah.
So he gets
how could he be worth $1 million? He's so boring.
I don't know, man. It was a big get for Canon Film or Canon Group or whoever it is.
Golem and Globus.
There you go. So he gets onto the boat and they're like, yeah, we did it. But main bad guy that was torturing him is like, I also have a boat.
Uh-huh.
I will go alone.
And this is where we get the next scene where somebody just sneaks up on Braddock because he's just driving the boat in the yeah. middle of the night. And main bad guy just is on the boat now and he just yeah. sneaks up to try and kill Braddock. And then
with
Braddock like stops the axe and then fights him off and then kills him. And this is literally like the seventh time in a row we've got this exact scene yeah. where Braddock's just standing around like doop de doop de doop, and then somebody tries to sneak up on him but fails, and then he just kills him. Like, I get it, movie. This is the part of the movie yeah. where this is happening. That's been established. There's a lot of people after him. Please just move on to the big explosions of the third act, I beg of you.
But the weird part is, it's the middle of the fucking movie,
and the
and
main,
it's the
bad,
main
guy
bad guy.
Been yeah, because James Hong could have been the main bad guy, but he's dead. This other guy's been established as James Hong's right-hand man, and also the guy who personally tortured fucking Braddock. So
right.
it's like, well, now he's definitely the main bad guy. But no, now he's killed
unceremoniously
on the boat over to Vietnam before we're even back to Vietnam. There's no more villains in this movie.
So all the villains are dead.
Yep.
They get to Vietnam.
It's all just faceless Vietnamese soldiers now.
They pull it up. And,
so now we get our Heart of Darkness fucking shit going on. This is Apocalypse Now. They're taking their tricked out fucking Kevlar coated super raft up the river to this POW camp, which... What did James Hong say when he's like, where are the fucking bad guys? Because like, it was like one or two words. It wasn't like, here are the coordinates of where they're being kept. How the fuck does he know where this thing is?
He was like off the island, or it's like off the whatever, like 8 miles in.
Either way, we take a boat
but
from
yeah,
Thailand
it wasn't
to
that
Vietnam.
Specific.
We roll up on the coast, hop into a raft, and then within 6 minutes, he's motored up a fucking river, and we're at the POW camp.
Well, I think
which
he did spit out the name of the island.
Because this movie was getting pretty fucking boring up to this yeah. point, so let's cut some corners here. I'm not knocking that. That's a good plan.
Yeah, all corners are cut for the rest of this movie. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's
the
just
rest
like,
of this movie is what the whole movie should have fucking been.
Yeah, that's like, whoop, we showed up.
Which I like at this point, though, they're like before all hell breaks loose, they're sneaking up
they're
to
they're trying
like,
to be quiet,
camp.
Yeah.
Except that, like... They're in a fucking gigantic crazy raft, and
it's
the
like
guy driving it is a 400-pound white guy in a fucking Hawaiian
yeah.
shirt. It's just like, if anybody catches
that's
a goddamn
fucking
glimpse
point.
Of you, they're going to be like, what the hell is that crazy thing out on the river? Should not be out there. Who is that giant white pale man in that flamboyant Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Like, Norris is in all camo. He's got, like, the gun covered up with, like, a fake...
yeah,
like
that's the thing. He's
leaves
like
and
doing
stuff.
Every little thing he can to pretend like he's sneaking, except for the 400-pound white man in the Hawaiian
yeah.
shirt
and the big like cartoonish shark teeth
yeah, that's
on
right.
the front of the boat.
There's
too.
Some cool stuff going on there. Man, this yeah. raft is cool as hell.
It is pretty cool. So they're like, "Oh, we're gonna sneak around, kill some people," and
Norris is killing some people real quiet while just they make a big deal, Apocalypse Now style, like, never get out of the boat, fucking. And Emmett Walsh does not want to get out of the boat.
Right.
So he's just sitting in the boat with his gun trained, just like, Norris can silently take these guys out. He's been doing it the whole movie.
Yeah.
But then he sort of loses faith in Norris for a second and is just like, I got to help him out.
Shoot these
Takes
guys.
A shot, shoots a guy. Now their fucking location's blown.
Yeah.
The rest of this movie is just going to be them fighting.
And it is.
It is. Except for that we get another scene where there's far too much sneaking.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't even know how we get from this point to where it's broad daylight and they're like, oh, we got to fight, to where then at the POW camp and it's nighttime and Norris is sneaking in. I'm like, how are we sneaking again? Like, we were just in a firefight and our location was blown.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think,
like,
it's explained,
just
really.
Just wandering off.
It's just, I think
somehow he knows
where this
camp is. We're
just getting scenes thrown together.
Or maybe he spent all day wandering looking
for the
camp.
Once again, we get he's all this C4 he asked for. He's going around. He's sneaking around. He's planting it all over the fucking thing. And it's not just like, oh, I see that he did it on this corner of this building, and I see that he did it on this corner of this building. Yeah. Now we're over, and like, we understand he's got it all over. No, it's like another 10 minutes where you're just watching him sneak and just set up little bombs over and over again, trying to be quiet. Oh, so quiet. There's a good 20 minutes of this movie that's just Chuck Norris just like on his tippy toes.
The funniest part, though, is he finally sets the C4, and I'm like, oh, we're finally going to get an explosion. But then he just like nonchalantly walks away from it, and I'm like, oh, okay, so we got to wait like 10 minutes for, there's going to be like some dialogue, and then it's like, oh, remember that bomb I set? And then they show
it's
the timer.
Part of my backup plan.
They show the timer, and it's at 7 seconds, and I was like, why the fuck's he walking so slow? Like, that's a lot of C4, man. Like, you might want to pick up the pace.
The least dynamic, most wooden action hero ever put on screen, no matter what's happening.
And so the fucking little shack just explodes into a giant explosion.
That's right. We got flames everywhere. And finally, I'm just like, ah, we got a POW camp in Nam that's totally in flames. Norris is shooting his way in. Like, this is the movie I've been asking for.
So he's lighting everybody up. He's killing all the bad guys. And he's like, all right, it's time to free the...
Yeah, let's knock open these cages and get all these American POWs out of here into safety.
And it's just one Vietnamese man after another, and he's disappointed.
Yeah, there's no Americans here.
He's like, I would have left you in there to rot.
I feel like the guy he talks to has a weird accent, though. It's just like...
Yeah, I don't know.
Who is this guy supposed to be?
I don't know.
Why does he know English, and why does he speak it weird? I don't know
he
enough
was
about
on,
the politics of this place to understand, but
he was
also,
on whatever
I don't
side
think the movie did either.
Fighting alongside the
States. I don't think the movie understood either.
And he's like, well, where the fuck are the white guys at? And they're like, oh, they moved them 10 miles in.
I feel like he kind of had a British accent a bit, but I'm like... Ain't no fucking Brits around there. There was a lot of French around there.
Hello,
like,
Governor.
I don't understand at all what's happening.
Thanks for letting us out of a cage. Took that. Looks like they took all the Americans.
Exactly what that man sounded
10
like.
10 miles in.
Which this is funny because he says directly, he's like, the Americans are gone. They took them out like no more than 3 hours ago. And he's like, where'd they take him? They're like, they took him out. There's one road. It travels directly along the river the entire way. Norris is like, great. Hop in my raft. Literally 30 seconds later, he's caught up with these trucks.
Yeah.
They're going down the river that he said probably left, like, you know, somewhere around, but no longer than 3 hours ago. That's one fast fucking raft, dude.
Also, think about it. You probably would have saw them on your way in because you were going along the river.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
In a
raft. Because there is only one road,
and
it travels the entire way, we're told directly, only along the river.
Right.
This is like that fucking Simpsons gag Night Boat where every episode of Night Boat, they have to find a way for like Night Boat to be able to find an inlet or a fjord so that the action can keep happening in this movie. Yeah.
We now return to Night Boat, the crime-solving boat.
Faster, Night Boat. We've got to catch those starfish poachers.
You don't have to yell, Michael. I'm all around you. Oh, no, they're headed for land.
We'll never catch them now.
Incorrect. Look, a canal.
Oh, Night Boat, go!
They finally catch up to the guys, and then we get this big, like, raft fight, and it's pretty cool what this raft is doing. And I'm like, is this entire movie's existence built around the fact that they had this raft?
This cool
and they're
raft.
Like, write a script where we could do some shit with this raft out on some water.
So they're
I
doing,
think so.
They're doing raft shit.
They're fucking ramping off things and like dropping hand grenades into boats that they ramp over.
Yeah.
It's fucking wild.
Yeah, it's like if anybody ever went to that Waterworld stunt spectacular.
I didn't, but I want to now.
Universal Studios, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's just...
Waterworld was a huge failure. They made theme park attractions for
they
it.
They built an entire stunt spectacular.
Oh, man, that movie lost more money than I even realized.
It's about probably like 8 times the size of your property.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
I love hearing that.
A lot of money had to go into that and still does.
So eventually the raft does get rocket launched, though, and it explodes, and Emmett Walsh and Chuck Norris go flying off the raft.
But it's well worth it.
Yeah, because we get a big dramatic moment where all the Vietnamese guys are like, ah, did you see that? We rocket launched them. They're fucking dead. But then we come to see that it turns out this river they're in is just like waist deep and like completely tepid water.
3 feet of standing water.
It's not actually a river at all, it turns out, because Norris very dramatically in slow-mo just emerges from the depths, gigantic machine gun in his hand, and just slow-mo machine guns the hell out of all these fucking chuckleheads that think they can laugh at him.
Yeah, it's a really cool scene.
Yeah, it's if you're going to like paint a picture of missing in action, you're fucking painting this frame of him popping out of the water with the machine gun. Just glorious.
Just slowly rising up and then just
fucking water droplets rippling off his ginger head.
Yep.
And then he's even kind of got like a little bit of a Rambo-esque headband on, which looks pretty cool. It doesn't look Rambo cool, but like it looks pretty cool.
Looks pretty cool. So he starts shooting everybody, and then he gets the fucking POWs.
Oh,
there
the prisoners.
He gets the POWs.
They were in the back of the truck. They sort of help fight their way out, too. We get a dramatic, like, face-to-face with them and Chuck Norris, where they're, like, wild animals. They've been locked up for so long. And he's just like,
we're going home.
We're going home. And then these guys are all like, fucking hell yeah. Let's
hell
get
yeah.
out of here.
I can't wait to go to Sizzler.
So now it's like a race against the clock. They got to get back to the fucking boat and get out of Vietnam, but they still got just faceless masses of fucking army men coming after them.
Yeah.
So like it's a chase. They hop in a car. They're trying to roll back to where like Norris, he stashed a tinier raft earlier. He's just like, just in case our first raft goes bad, now we got another raft where we can get out to the boat.
Yeah,
so we get out to that. They're loading the guys into this, trying to get out to the boat. And this is where
we get
the final battle. That's just one of the most incomprehensible, stupid things I've ever seen in my life. We get these men just out in open water with no cover, slowly trying to make their way out to this boat, while seemingly there's men on all sides of them shooting machine guns at them for like 10 minutes straight. Nobody gets hit once for no discernible reason.
Nah.
Like, we're giving no reason why these people aren't instantly slaughtered. And it's just like, well, okay, they're really pushing it. They're really pushing it. Oh, God, they're pushing it. And then we get, like, crazy attack boats coming, and, like, they're doing fucking drive-bys with machine guns. At this point, we do get fucking M.M. Walsh's old swab up on his boat helping them out a little bit. He's got a fucking big machine gun going.
Yeah.
And it's an insane scene where, like, the attack boat's coming for him. He's shooting at it. The attack boat's coming for him. He's shooting at it.
The boat keeps getting further away
and then closer to and then like further away.
Yeah.
Like them trying to leave the shore, like 1 second they're 10 feet off the shore and then like they're almost to the boat and then they're back. Like the continuity's crazy. Like where everything is in relation to each other makes no sense. There's no like linear movement that you can like be like, ooh, we're getting closer. We're getting closer.
Yeah,
this
no,
is tense. You know where no one is. Nothing that's happening makes
any sense.
It's
all about just trying to get more bullets.
Just more bullets are on the fucking screen. More like just close-ups of people firing guns just at nothing, seemingly. Nobody's aiming at anything. It's the biggest fucking stupid mess of a final battle I've maybe ever seen.
And then what the...
The fucking guy with the machine gun gets smoked. So then Emmett Walsh is like, oh, I got to go take the perch up there.
That's right. Yeah,
he rolls off the fucking raft and swims to go take the perch. And it's just like, he seemed to have swam there within 10 seconds. Why don't they all just get out of the raft and swim? Because then they're not up on the raft like visible targets for these machine guns.
Well, you know, it's not always that easy.
At this point, the chopper that they had rented as their backup shows up.
Yeah.
So Emmett Walsh is up on the boat with the machine gun trying to cover while they're all loading into the chopper. The attack boat, again, is like coming towards them. And it's like, why is it coming towards them again? It already came towards them. Like, we've been through this.
Well, you know.
Did it like loop around and
yes.
go back out into the ocean again for a while and then loop
sure.
back towards it again for no reason?
Yes, it did.
So then he's shooting at them. They're getting closer. And then we just get a jump cut to the boat exploding.
Yeah.
Like, no establishing shot of like, they're firing on the boat. Oh, there's Emmett Walsh taking some bullets. It's just a like way, way far away shot of the boat exploding.
It's explosions.
And it's like, so is he dead?
Sure.
You don't see him die. You don't see a body. He's never referenced again. None of the characters take a second to like mourn him or acknowledge that he's dead.
That's nice of him to do that for us.
A jump cut to the boat exploding. And then you have to assume that probably the second biggest character in this movie, I guess he died.
Sure.
Oh, brother.
He's not at the helicopter.
Yeah, he certainly isn't.
And the good guys are. That's
so
pretty much it.
Chopper guy's like, oh, man, if I knew I was going to fly my chopper into a literal war zone, I would have asked for more money. Not just like, hey, you had me fly into a literal war zone. The Vietnamese government is shooting at me. Like, this is very bad for me. Like, we got to get out of here back to Thailand. No, Chuck Norris is like, we're flying this thing directly into Saigon.
I can't wait to come here for New Year's.
I guess I have to do that. Chuck Norris rented my helicopter.
I heard he pointed a gun at the boat guy. I better do what he says.
Then we get a big dramatic final fucking scene.
Where they're like,
in the hearing room again or whatever.
Yeah, this guy's a war criminal. He's a bad
guy. Can't trust a thing he said.
He's a piece of shit.
And in conclusion, there are no living POWs in Vietnam.
Record scratch.
Record scratch, because then Chuck Norris and all the people burst into the room, and like you're just like, oh, is Chuck Norris going to give a big speech about like everything that's been done to them and how all this bullshit is and how everybody's been lied to?
No.
Wait, he doesn't?
No.
So how's it end then? Freeze frame. They're not even through the door all the way.
Yeah.
It's a literal freeze frame. And Chuck Norris is making a goofy face.
Yeah.
And the other, like, POW he's bringing through his proof isn't even, like, looking at the camera yet.
Freeze frame.
Was that the most normal face that Chuck Norris was making? Like, even if you want to end it on a freeze frame there, he looked like... It looked like one of those funny bits where you freeze frame, like, on somebody talking and you're like, oh, look how dumb they look.
Yeah, the old Tim and Eric bit.
That's how they ended the movie. It was insane.
It was a crazy war.
So anyways, once again, this is the theme going on here. The United States retroactively wins the Vietnam War through cinema.
Yeah.
USA, USA.
Hell yeah. Got our boys back.
That's it for Missing in Action. There's no way there could possibly be another Missing in Action movie because everything's wrapped up.
Or two.
What is two about? I'm interested now.
There's three of them.
Yeah, I know, but like...
The second one,
three,
okay.
I can see just like, okay, now it's going to be completely just whatever. Braddock's back doing whatever. But you know for that second one, they tried to like tell a legit story.
Hold
again.
On.
Like,
no.
This is what's happening.
They filmed the first two together.
Uh-huh.
Because they knew they were doing these Chuck Norris movies.
Oh, boy.
And they filmed Missing in Action and Missing in Action 2 together.
Mm-hmm.
But Cannon was like, woof, the second movie we made is clearly the better movie.
Oh.
So the second one that they filmed became Missing in Action. And the first one they filmed became Missing in Action 2.
It's a prequel. During the Vietnam War.
The beginning or whatever.
That's why I remember so much more Vietnam stuff from my Missing in Action memories.
Yeah.
And that's why the Bag of Rats thing is way cooler than anything that happened in this whole fucking piece of shit movie.
And then the third one's just entitled Braddock, and it's about his wife and kids going into a camp.
It's his Taken. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break. Let's get our thoughts together, and then, you know, Missing in Action is going to enter Judgment Day, where I don't think it's going to fare very well.
Let's go get our thoughts together in the suicide shed.
Hmm. Major Reisman. You are ordered by Allied command to select 12 general prisoners, convicted by courts-martial and sentenced to be executed or serve lengthy prison terms for murder, rape, robbery, and other crimes of violence. And you will deliver them secretly behind enemy lines in France to undertake a mission of sabotage that could change the course of the war. The 12 men will be known as the Dirty Dozen.
Lee Marvin as Major John Reisman.
There's a little of Major Reisman in every man, says Marvin. Tough and unyielding, yet compassionate. I think it's the best role I've ever been asked to play.
You've all volunteered for a mission which gives you just three ways to go. Either you can follow up in training and be shipped back here for immediate execution of sentence, or you can follow up in combat, in which case I will personally blow your brains out, or you can do as you're told, in which case you might just get by.
Now you hold it right there. This war was not started for your private gratification, and you can be damn sure that this army isn't being run for your personal convenience either.
Ernest Borgnine as General Warden. I'm tired of seeing generals portrayed as desk-bound pen pushers, says Borgnine. So I've played Warden as a rough professional soldier.
Robert Ryan as Colonel Everett Dasher Breed.
There were officers like Breed, says Ryan, who could never suffer the rules broken or even bent a little.
Major Reisman's compliments, sir.
Tell him well, sir.
You prefer to be captured or destroyed?
Jimmy Brown as Napoleon Jefferson.
Jefferson is any man fighting for recognition against the odds, says Brown. I think I understand him pretty well.
The hell is this?
John Cassavetes as Victor Franco.
Says Cassavetes. Franco is a petty hoodlum forced to heroism by circumstances beyond his control.
We go on that mission, we all get killed. That's what they want! That's what they want!
Trini Lopez as Jimenez.
He's crawling with hate.
Charles Bronson as Vladislav.
The last guy in the world you'd expect to be a hero.
Telly Savalas as Archer Maggot.
Maggot is a maniac, says Savalas. His religious fanaticism can never be moderated or quelled. It is a constant danger.
Clint Walker as Samson Posey.
An Indian with war paint smeared on his soul. Train them. Excite them. Arm them.
And turn them loose on the Nazi high command.
Private detective who's run out of luck. He's an ex-quarterback who was thrown from the game. They were trying to clean up their act when they got dragged into the dirty world of gridiron corruption. Kick off this Christmas with the only full-blown action movie of the season.
What am I gonna do? Point at the bad guy to shoot!
Bruce Willis, Damon Williams, The Last Boy Scout. Rated R. Special sneak preview this Saturday night. Check newspapers or theaters.
What's it? What is it?
What is it?
I don't know. Were you a Faith No More fan?
Faith No More was not in my wheelhouse, but not necessarily because I knew a lot of their music, I don't think. I remember that one. They played it on the MTV a lot.
I just always thought it was wrong the way they treated Bjork's fish.
That's also the one thing I know about them is that their fucking video had Bjork's fish in it because it was on Pop-Up Video.
Yep.
Pop-Up Video. I feel like underrated as far as how many hours of that were probably watched by millions and millions of people. Just dumb filler TV that like everyone I knew at the time had seen every episode just for no reason other than like the internet didn't exist anymore. So you had to watch something. Yeah, you had to be sitting in front of the TV at all times.
When we watched Rambo last week, I own a nice Blu-ray collection of the original trilogy.
Ooh,
and so
lovely.
Since it wasn't streaming anywhere, I popped it on there, watch it for free, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was pissed off to find out afterwards I could have been watching the movie the whole time with trivia popping up.
Oh, that's kind of
like
pop-up
video, but Rambo edition.
Blu-ray fucking special feature.
Yeah, where they just show you the movie and just
got it,
give you some trivia.
I've got it on my iTunes account there, so I wonder, there are iTunes extras. Yeah. I wonder if I have that. If so, I'm going to be doing that soon.
Yeah, I was like,
I want to know much about Rambo as I can.
I was like, I should have been watching this the entire time.
What we should have been doing this week instead of watching this is just watching Rambo 2, because it's a much better movie about saving POWs post-Vietnam War.
Are there 5 weeks in November?
There are not. We've got one more November going on, unless I snafu'd the calendar again.
Well, I was going to say,
I think that only happened once.
Yeah, I was going to say, we should have, if there were five, we should have just gone through every Rambo movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we got to space out the Rambos. Five. Those Rambos are big things.
That's true.
But out there in the world, Judgment Day, this is where we dig into what the world had to say about missing in action. And I got to say, doesn't seem like there's a lot of people who have seen Missing in Action.
Oh.
But, like, the reviews were kind of okay. Like, you get a lot of, like, negative reviews that are boring because they're going to be like, this is jingoistic and, you know, Reagan era. And you get a lot of positive ones that are like, fucking Chuck Norris joke, hyperbole about how masculine this movie is. I don't like any of that stuff. Like, I'm not going to give you the credit for, like, writing a review for using Chuck Norris jokes on fucking IMDb or Amazon, you fucking fools. So what I did is I just picked one five-bullet review, and I picked one-bullet review, and I'll read the two of those. But also, I have a special review from the official Baby Oil and Blow film critic. I'm just going to make it official now. Ivo Cobra 8.
Whoa.
I don't know if we're going to the well too much with this guy, maybe, I was thinking, but no. I asked around. The listeners, they love him. They want as much Ivo Cobra 8 as possible. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to make him our official film critic, I think.
Yeah, the official third voice.
Stamp of approval here. But we'll start out here with this one bullet review from IMDb user, The Bog of Terror of Eternal. It's all one word. The Bog of Eternal Stench. All one word.
Huh.
One bullet review. Huh. He says, what an ironic name for the film. It really is Missing in Action.
I get it.
And acting.
Oh.
Chuck Norris is a complete bore throughout the film. He has one expression, remains wooden, and fails big time as any kind of action star. I have no idea how this guy became famous, let alone a cult icon. This is ringing true with me.
Yeah.
His martial arts sucks balls.
I don't know about that.
I guess his fame comes from being in that Bruce Lee movie. It's undeniably true. Missing in Action lacks in thrills and is so contrived, it's a chore to get through. I laughed so many times at ridiculous scenes, like how every bad guy misses him while firing at him, despite outnumbering him, and he just turns around and kills them straight away. I also laughed when the Asian guy and Jack Tucker take turns on the boat machine gun and repeatedly shoot the bad guy's boat coming towards them, and it seems to go on forever. Ha 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 ha. The boat seems to be stuck in a loop, repeatedly coming toward from where it started off from, just like that scene in Monty Python's Holy Grail. I was expecting the bad guy's boat to finally explode, but no, Jack Tucker's boat explodes instead. No idea how, and he dies. Ha ha ha. So effing stupid. This film sucks, and Chuck Norris sucks, but I enjoyed the laughs. One bullet from IMDb user, The Bog of Eternal Stench.
Well, that's, you know, it's like his opinion.
Mm-hmm. So that's his opinion. Right here, we got another opinion. This five-bullet review comes from IMDb user Yarborough.
Hmm. Yarborough Fair?
May I ask you a question? What do you think of me?
What do you mean?
You've known me nearly all your life. You must have formed some opinion of me.
Well, I always thought that you were a very nice person.
Did you know I was an alcoholic?
What?
He's got to say, After reading all the Bin Ladens here claiming that Missing in Action is a pseudo-patriotic, racist, or jingoistic film, I thought I'd weigh in.
Hell yeah, call him Bin Laden's again.
MIA was made for the same audience that all overdone, action-packed, unreal B-films are, and for the same purpose. Pure entertainment.
Boom.
I'm no mind reader, but the people watching MIA aren't doing it for a serious understanding of past social and political issues or controversies.
Nope.
They're watching it to see guys get beaten up with karate moves shot up by M60s, or to see completely naked women make total asses out of themselves by dancing around or strutting their stuff. I pity those who use the review of this film to make some grand anti-American political statement.
Yes.
If you know what Norris flicks are like and you can't stand them, why the hell did you pop this one in?
That's a great question.
5 bullets from IMDb user Yarborough.
All right, hit me with the goods now.
Taking people to task. So this is, at this point, we've only used him when he gives 5 bullet reviews.
I was going to say, is this the first non?
So, yeah, this is a very subdued, very even-keeled 4 bullet review from Baby Women Blow official film critic Ivo Cobra 8.
Now, is that 4 of ours or like 4 of his? Because he works on like a 1 to 10 scale, right?
He works on several scales that show up at different times throughout his...
So this is 4 out of 5.
But officially,
bullets?
What he knocked in on the IMDb star thing is 8 bullets out of 10, which our 5 bullet rating gets a 4 bullet.
Yeah, that averages out to a 4.
That's what I'm going by here.
I concur.
Oh, no.
Oh, God, what?
This is... Okay. 4 bullet review from Ivo Cobra. Thursday, 4th May, Chuck Norris arrived in Ljubljana, Slovenia, and he visited us to make a car commercial.
Wait, from where?
Ljubljana, Slovenia.
And he visited us
to make a car commercial.
We finally know where he's from, Slovenia.
This is the first reading for me.
That's in Russia, right?
It on here. It's in Slovenia. It's all over there.
Where's Slovenia?
You know, it's all part of it.
Yeah, all right.
He stays by us till tomorrow, then he returns back to his homeland. I love Chuck Norris. I grew up watching his movies, and Missing in Action defines my childhood. And yeah. I grew up watching this movie.
Of course he did.
I am writing this review in honor of Chuck Norris.
Hell yeah.
Slovenia loves Chuck Norris.
Oh, man.
Missing in Action is an underrated, solid, very decent, good, pure, badass action war flick. It is my number one favorite Chuck Norris movie. I love this movie to death and have it on Blu-ray in high def in my collection. I love the music score from Jay Chataway. It is a beautiful score.
Goddamn right it is.
It is rating hard R. R. It is not for kids. It is a pure sample entertaining flick. It has explosions, a lot of gun shootouts, martial arts, climbing the electric wire and walls.
True.
And you have even bobby traps. You see a lot of boats on the water.
Absolutely.
Lots of jungle, and it is one man army action hero type. One man on a mission to find American POWs who are still imprisoned in the country. You'll see lots of heavy automatic and explosive weapons, and you'll see them used well. This is my favorite Chuck Norris film for the simple fact that it is one of the best action hero moments ever, with Braddock coming out of the water in super slow-mo and blasting bad guys to pieces. Missing in Action and Missing in Action 2, The Beginning, were made back-to-back, with Part 2 being ready... See, I would have known all this if I had just read Ivo Cobra's review beforehand. With Part 2 being ready first, so they release it as this movie, Missing in Action. I am defending this film. Why I am keep hearing from film critics and assholes like Mazuin, who has no dick about movies, how bad this movie is. It is a ripoff of the Rambo film series. Rambo was better. Rambo was looking for American POWs and blah, blah, blah. Shut up, all of you.
Yeah.
Missing in Action and Chuck Norris is not yours kind of type action hero or his movies. They are just not for you, so fuck you.
Fuck you.
I am big fan of Rambo movies. I love all of them. But
it's
Missing in Action is a
different
Vietnam action war movie who is really fictional portrayed. The movie is not perfect. It is not great realistic or the best. It does have
it's
a plot
based
holes,
on facts like Rambo.
I am a little confused, but I love Colonel James Braddock. I love the character portrayed.
Yeah.
Chuck Norris does a fine and solid job as the hero. I love the action, the rescue mission. I love this movie from the 80s, and I miss these kind of action movies today. They don't make them like this anymore. He saves people. He saves four American POW prisoners, and he helped them. I love the ending of the movie. I love the jungle. I love how Colonel James Braddock, Chuck Norris, uses the M60 during the POW rescue mission, and he opens fire with the M60 mounted on the fast boat classic scene, and he blasts all the bad guys away. There's a lot of Chuck Norris sneaking around in this movie, more than Norris smashing guys, but that's present too. Norris doesn't take any crap, and I love the muscle duel between him and one enemy where Chuck slaps a knife right into his heart, literally. James Hong makes an appearance as General Trow as the villain, and he's good at his job. He constantly taunts Braddock until Braddock literally attacks Trow in his sleep.
Yeah.
The movie really lets you know where they stand on the issue of whether or not there are POWs being secretly kept in Vietnam, yeah, with its exhilarating, in-your-face Vietnamese government ending.
Fuck yeah.
Missing in Actions gets 8 out of 10 at my favorite Chuck Norris film, a brisk action adventure with good old Chuck playing a stoic American super soldier.
Good old Chuck.
Fighting for America's freedom no matter the risks. It's a great Reagan-era action flick, unapologetic and brutal. Missing in Action is a 1984 American action film directed by Joseph Zito and starring Chuck Norris. It is set in the context of the Vietnam War POW-MIA issue. Colonel Braddock, who escaped a Vietnamese prisoner of war camp 10 years earlier, returns to Vietnam to find American soldiers listed as missing in action during the Vietnam War.
True.
The film was followed by a prequel, Missing in Action 2, The Beginning, 1985, and a sequel, Braddock, Missing in Action 3, 1988.
Okay.
4 bullets from IMDb user and the official film critic of this podcast, Iwo Cobra 8.
4 out of 5. Wow.
Who we've now learned is not just a woman, but a Slovenian woman.
Ljubljana or whatever is the capital of Slovenia.
Okay.
Slovenia.
Formerly of the USSR or just over there?
Located smack dab in between Austria and Croatia.
Oh, that's good company to be in.
Absolutely. There you have it.
You're fucking learning things listening to this goddamn podcast.
Yeah.
This is amazing for you.
It's like Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
With a shotgun.
Uh-huh. A couple of raven-haired beauties here as your hosts.
Goddamn right.
Matt, what are your final thoughts and your bullet rating of Missing in Action from 1984?
Chuck Norris has been around the world from London to the Carolinas.
Boom, bop.
Chucky Norris. It is Reagan Entertainment, like our guy girl Iwo Cobra stated.
They should have just got Reagan to do a cameo, I feel like.
This movie...
He was an actor. Get him in there.
Has a lot of issues, Nate.
Mm.
A lot of them. A lot of bad issues.
That's true. Not a good movie, Matt.
I'm just going to get to the
point
here.
Most of it's bad.
The majority of it's bad. But I really liked M. Emmett Brown or whatever his name is.
M. Emmett Walsh?
Yeah. No, Emmett Brown.
Dr. Emmett Brown?
Yeah, I like him.
Different guy entirely.
Great Scott!
I like Jack Tucker.
Would have changed this movie. Okay, yeah.
I like Jack Tucker.
I never even noticed his name was Jack. I mean, he says it in that one scene. I'm looking for my friend Jack Tucker.
They call him Tuck a lot.
Tuck, that's what he's calling him. Because I was like, I don't remember hearing that name throughout the movie.
He says it. I like his character a lot. I just like that Chuck Norris is so hell-bent on, like, nothing but, like, I don't care what they say about me. I know I ain't crazy. Mm-hmm. I gotta get them veterans out of there. Yeah.
I don't care about international law, attacks on sovereign nations.
It makes us wait, but it blows stuff up.
International incidents.
And the thing that I really liked about this movie, and it's the first one we've had since we started doing it, gratuitous nudity.
There you go.
And for that...
You're making a lot of good points.
For that... I'm going to bump it all the way up to 2 full bullets.
2 full bullets.
Saying it's not good.
Yeah.
But it's a little above bad.
Missing in Action is completely inept in almost every way. Its action sucks. Its action hero is very wooden and unappealing. The script is simplistic and stupid. Like you, I can't appreciate the fact that it understands that it is a stupid movie, though.
Yeah.
I wish it could have leaned into that and cut out all the boring parts.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen a few movies that make basically no sense, and it's clearly because they just cut out all the boring parts to have a 90-minute movie.
Yes.
You should have done that. I would have been like, it's trash, but it's great trash. I think that it's bad. Like, it's not terrible. Like, a one bullet movie is a terrible movie that I don't want to see. 1.5 bullet movie is like a movie where it's just like, ah, it's leaning into the fact that it's terrible, which on the baseline, I got to say, I'd give this 1.5. But also, I like M. Emmett Walsh so much, and he's doing such a good job as a character. I got to bump it up another half fucking bullet. I'm right there with you. Two bullets. It's fucking right there. Stamped it. Baby Oil and Blow. It's official. Official.
Gives you just enough to watch.
That's right. And you're going to be needing things to watch going forward because we got a big holiday week coming up pretty soon here. It's fucking Thanksgiving.
Next week.
Thanksgiving already?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. I've done nothing to prepare.
Oh, no.
You know, a lot of people are going to be sitting around. There's going to be some football or whatever. There's going to be some movies you're going to need to watch. You're going to be needing to watch movies with weird old man relatives. Mm. That's why we have picked out what we feel is the best movie to watch with your old man relatives sitting around turkey drunk farting in a living room on Thanksgiving, which is going to be the fucking Dirty Dozen. Every old man's platonic ideal of just war stories and just masculine bullshit.
There you go.
That's what we're going to be doing next week here on the podcast. I look forward to it.
I am so stoked.
Should we bake a pie to eat during our recording next week?
Several pies.
Okay.
And then we'll leave them out on the windowsill.
No, that's a good way to attract hobos. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah, are they the colorful, friendly type? With the drawn-on beards.
They might be able to teach us some grifts.
Yeah, they might be war veterans themselves, you know?
Oh, yeah. We could get some official war veteran interviews. Like we were saying last week, we'd go to the VFW. We're too lazy to do that. Yeah, but we can set some warm pies out on the windowsill and just attract them here.
Yeah, so...
That's a perfect plan.
Join us next week when we either get some hobo veterans to give us their thoughts.
We support the veterans. Or, that's what this is all about. Keep that in mind.
Or we get ransacked and murdered here on Baby Oil and Blow. Either way, stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down, trying to find peace of mind can break your heart.